Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's your family's dark secret? Story 1. I don't really think this is a dark secret, but it's something I didn't find out until I was an adult, mostly because my grandma doesn't like talking about it. So I think it counts. While going through some of my grandma's old belongings after my mother passed away, I found a few photographs of a baby. It wasn't my mom because she had dark, almost black hair at birth, while this baby was blonde. Alongside the photos, I found a birth certificate for someone named Francesco, mom's maiden name. I asked my grandma about it, and at first she didn't want to tell me. I gave her some space, and eventually she must have decided that I deserved to know. Or maybe she was just tired of keeping the secret, because she told me the story. Francesco, or Frank, as they called him, was my grandma's son, my mom's younger brother by a couple of years. When Frank was 3, my grandma's ex-husband kidnapped him, and she never saw him again. My grandma's ex-husband, my grandfather, though I don't consider him as such, especially since I never met him, was involved with the mob. It's suspected that he took Frank with him back to Sicily, but nobody is certain. My grandma believes he might have taken my mom too, had she not been in the hospital at the time, sick with tonsillitis. This has given me some insight into why that side of my family can be so secretive about certain things. For example, I didn't even know my mom had been married before she met my dad until I was a teenager. It also makes me feel deeply sorry for my grandma, who had to carry this pain all her life. Story 2. My great-grandmother was married to her first husband, an Italian mobster in New York, in the early 1920s. They had 4 children together. In 1928, 6 years after they were married, she disappeared, and no one in the family knew what had happened to her. Quietly, they all assumed her husband had her killed, as he was known to be very abusive toward her. But that wasn't the case. She ran off with my great-grandfather. They moved to Philadelphia and changed their last names. They were always very secretive about their past. No one knew their original family names or where they had come from until I took a DNA test and matched with a 3rd cousin descended from her first set of children. It turns out her original 4 children were sent to orphanage because their father couldn't take care of them. The discovery was a huge surprise for both sides of the family and brought up some very hurt feelings, especially for the children she had abandoned. Although they are now in their 90s, this revelation affected them their entire lives. Story 3. My paternal grandmother got pregnant with my dad when she was about 17 in a small town in northern Louisiana. She claimed my grandfather was abusive, so she and her sisters took off for New Mexico when she was 19, and my dad was not yet 2 years old. Along the way, she unexpectedly gave birth to my uncle, who bears little resemblance to my dad, even though they have the same mom. After settling in New Mexico, my grandma openly had an affair with her 60-something-year-old boss until she met my step-grandfather. He was a great guy and raised my dad and uncle as if they were his own children. Eventually, my step-grandfather was overjoyed when my grandma got pregnant with his baby. But when my aunt was born, she bore a striking resemblance to my grandma's boss. That's when things took a dramatic turn. The boss's wife showed up at their house with a gun and a checkbook, declaring that one of the two would be used to get my grandma to leave. In 1961, my grandma accepted a check for about $10,000, and she and my step-grandfather used the money to buy a new house. Things seemed fine for a while, but my grandma went on to have countless affairs. She married 2 more times, and her betrayals devastated my step-grandfather. After raising all 3 of her children, he ended up taking his own life. Even then, my grandma tried to swoop in and claim his Social Security survivor benefits. Right before my grandma passed away a few years ago, she kicked out her last husband, cleaned out their joint savings account, and took off with my aunt and cousins to Arkansas. Right after I was born, my biological grandfather, the one my grandma had accused of being abusive, showed up on our doorstep. He brought boxes full of letters, birthday cards, and newspaper clippings about my dad's achievements, like sports and earning his PhD. My grandma had gone through all of it, taken the cash and checks he had sent, and kept the rest just to be cruel. She had returned the remnants to him over the years. It turns out my biological grandfather was a great guy. He was never abusive, and he missed my dad terribly. He had worked blue-collar jobs his whole life and couldn't afford to leave town and fight for custody. The real reason my grandma left at 19 was because she'd had an affair with the local Buick salesman, and his wife had shown up with a gun and no checkbook this time. Additional context. Before I knew all this, I thought my grandma was just a sweet, typical grandmother. To me, she was kind and loving. She was great with my brother, who has severe autism, and was a supportive mother-in-law to my mom. She also had a stunning beauty that made her the center of attention. If she were born in this generation, she could have easily been a successful Instagram influencer. However, depending on who you were in her life, her character could be vastly different. She cut off my dad and our family completely before her final move to Arkansas, and we never understood why. We only learned of her passing from my great aunt. She was a complex, contradictory person, someone who could be amazing to some and destructive to others. A beautiful, charismatic woman whose flaws left a long trail of heartbreak behind her. Story 4. My grandma always told us that my grandpa's mother died when he was very young, and his father couldn't handle raising him, which is why he grew up with non-relatives. My sister and I did some digging, and the truth turned out to be much darker. My great-grandma was only 15 when my grandpa was born, and my great-grandpa was in his late 20s. From what we can tell, her family forced her to marry her abuser. She didn't die when my grandpa was little, as my grandma claimed. She actually passed away when my dad was a teenager. The reality is that she left her unhappy situation when my grandpa was still a child and never tried to see him again. After she left, my great-grandpa abandoned my grandpa. He left him on a neighbor's porch in the middle of the night and disappeared. Later, he went on to have two more children with another significantly younger woman. I think my grandma lied about my great-grandma dying to make my grandpa seem more sympathetic. He was a mean old man, and none of his grandkids wanted to be around him. My grandpa also repeated the cycle of abandonment. He got his first wife pregnant just before leaving for military training. When he returned, he claimed the child wasn't his, even though she had named the baby after him, and kicked both mother and child out. My grandma knew that the child, Junior, was his, and she used to secretly send money to his first wife whenever she could, without my grandpa finding out. When my grandma became pregnant with their first child, my grandpa tried to abandon her as well. Her family literally held him at gunpoint, forcing him to sign the birth certificate. He later claimed their other children, including my dad, his favorite and the only son he fully acknowledged. But he always swore my uncle wasn't his. None of the children from his marriage to my grandma ever met their older half-brother or his kids. My grandma once confided in me that she had hated my grandpa for almost their entire marriage, but felt she didn't know what else to do besides stay with him. It broke my heart to hear that. She's such a sweet woman and didn't deserve the way he treated her. Story 5. I'm fairly certain my uncle was in the Hell's Angels, or at least affiliated with them. His funeral was unforgettable. The procession to the cemetery was loud and proud. Edit. Let me share a bit more about him since this thread has gotten so much attention. I've been told that my uncle was a talented mechanic, even as a teenager. There's a well-known story in our family about the time he completely dismantled a car, leaving all the parts scattered across my grandmother's backyard. My grandma challenged him, saying she'd give him $100 if he could put it back together and get it running again. And he did. This was in the late 1960s or early 1970s, so $100 was a lot of money back then. At one point, he even owned his own repair shop. Besides being an incredible mechanic, he was also a motorcycle drag racer and very popular with the ladies. At his funeral, there was a long line of ex-girlfriends, all there to cry over him. While all of my uncles were bikers, I think he's the only one who truly became an outlaw type. You could call him the black sheep of the family, but he was loved by everyone. I only saw him during holidays, and I was just 12 years old when he passed away, so I never got to know him well. My mom, however, loved telling me stories about him. One of her favorites was how he would hide under her bed until she fell asleep and then yank her off the bed, just to scare her. Other times he'd hide outside her bedroom window and shoot her with his BB gun. Even though I didn't know him personally, it's clear he was a colorful, larger-than-life character who left a lasting impression on everyone who knew him. Story 6. My great-grandfather owned a large farm in Alabama. He was an imposing man, standing about 6 feet 6 inches, with a muscular and powerful build. He allowed black families who worked for him to live in houses on his property. He was a strict, old-school German who expected mutual respect, hard work, and for people to take care of the property they lived on. While he was extremely tough, he also tried to be fair in his own way. He had a habit of working his wives to death. He had multiple over his lifetime. But he also looked out for the families of his workers when the men often failed to do so. Many of the male workers would spend their wages gambling, drinking, and causing trouble. My great-grandfather would retrieve them from jail, deduct food and supplies for their families from their wages, and only give them what was left at cost. One year, my dad had to live with him after my grandfather lost his arm in an accident. While staying there, my dad fell off a horse and broke his arm. Instead of sympathy, my great-grandfather beat him severely for being clumsy before finally calling a doctor to treat the injury. During one winter, some fence posts went missing, and cattle were roaming freely. My great-grandfather discovered that one of the workers had stolen the post to use as firewood. In response, he beat the man to death in front of his house and ordered the man's family to leave the property. On another occasion, a piece of equipment was damaged. My great-grandfather lined up all the workers to find out who was responsible. One of the men, clearly guilty, mouthed off and challenged him. Without hesitation, my great-grandfather reached out and broke the man's neck as if it were nothing. He then calmly told the other workers to return to work and be more careful. Afterward, he called the sheriff, explained what had happened, and had the body removed. Back then, such killings were often considered justified, and there was no need to involve the courts. It was a completely different time and world. My dad, who was a big and tough man himself, never liked to talk about his grandfather. When he did, you could still hear the fear in his voice, as though he were speaking about the devil himself. Story 7. My mother has ruined multiple lives throughout her own. Before seatbelt laws were fully enforced, she flipped a car while babysitting two kids who were in the back seat. She survived. They didn't. My grandparents hid all their assets from the grieving family to avoid being sued for anything meaningful. Later in life, she was driving her Camaro when she wrapped it around a pole with her boyfriend in the passenger seat. He was paralyzed. She walked away with some scarring on her leg. Some of my earliest childhood memories are tied to this event. I remember the Camaro hidden under a tarp and a man who was living in our upstairs room, presumably the boyfriend she paralyzed. I wasn't allowed to see him or talk to him. Eventually, my parents shuffled him out the door and left him to fend for himself. Story 8. There are plenty of stories I could share, but I'll stick with the most recent one. My sister-in-law abuses my brother. She's punched him, smashed breakable objects over his head, and even tried to run him over during an argument. He left her for about 6 months, but she lured him back by pretending she was going to change and take couples therapy seriously. Predictably, she didn't. She's a serial cheater and likely has some type of cluster B personality disorder. She's also the most self-absorbed person I've ever met. Her family turns a blind eye to her behavior, pretending she's done nothing wrong, while my brother has distanced himself from me because I won't act like everything is fine with her. One example of her behavior: I bought Christmas presents for my family but didn't get her anything. Why would I, when she's made it clear she doesn't like me? She threw a tantrum, acting like a spoiled child. It didn't matter that she didn't get anything for me or my husband either. Worse, her tantrum happened on my dad's birthday, the second one since he passed away. My family's grief didn't matter to her. All that mattered was her deserved gift. I refuse to play games with abusers. They're always rigged, and you're set up to lose. Sadly, my brother has internalized her hatred to the point where he believes he deserves it. I only hope he wakes up someday, especially before her toxicity ruins his relationship with his daughter. Man or woman, no one should ever give an abuser a free pass to continue hurting others. Story 9. My grandpa embezzled a large amount of money from a utilities company on the east coast of the U.S. back in the 1930s. His job was to purchase land from farmers for utility poles. Instead of being honest, he inflated the purchase amounts. For example, he claimed he paid $2,000 for a piece of land that he actually bought for $500, pocketing the difference. Eventually, his scheme was discovered, and he became a wanted man. At the time, he was married with a family. Instead of facing the consequences, he decided to skip town and head west. When he arrived, he found a wallet in a cab and decided to steal the person's last name, adopting it as his own. With this new identity, he married my grandma and had four more kids. He never contacted his first family again. My dad, unknowingly, has been living with a fake family name for over 70 years. Years later, my dad managed to track down my grandpa's original family. They had no idea what had happened to their father and were shocked to learn about the life he had built in the West. My dad has stayed in touch with them since. As a side note, my grandpa was much older when he married my grandma. I'm only 31, but my biological grandfather was born in the 1800s. Storyten? My great-grandfather was reportedly a paranoid schizophrenic. In the 1920s, he had to drop out of school to take care of his mentally ill mother, which led to a deep hatred of women. By the 1930s, he married my great-grandmother, who was only 14 at the time. As the years went on, he became increasingly abusive and misogynistic. He viewed my great-grandmother as worthless and treated her with utter contempt. One story from that time is particularly chilling. My great-grandmother was so terrified for her life that she took a giant teddy bear their daughter had won at a fair and secretly sewed his shotgun inside it so he wouldn't find it. Unfortunately, that wasn't his only gun. One day he called a family meeting. He gathered my great-grandmother and their four children, who were all roughly middle or high school age, into the living room. He began ranting incoherently, saying things that made no sense. Then he pulled out a gun and shot my great-grandmother. Immediately after, he shot himself in the head in front of their children. Miraculously, my great-grandmother survived. Doctors said the bullet missed paralyzing her by less than half an inch. However, she suffered severe back problems for the rest of her life. It took years for the full story to come out. Adding to the trauma, back then, there were no professional cleaning services for situations like this. The children not only witnessed the horrific event, but also had to scrub their father's blood and brains off the walls themselves. This is the first time this story has been shared outside of our family. It's a dark, painful piece of our history. Story 11. As I've gotten older, I'm 22 now, my mom has started opening up to me more. She talks to me and confides in me as if I'm a close friend. One day, she shared something I had never known. When my oldest brother, who is 6 years older than me, was a newborn, my dad left. He didn't say a word. He just moved in with another woman, leaving my mom alone to care for my brother. My dad's parents, who absolutely adore my mom, were furious with him. He was gone for about a month. Then out of nowhere, he called my mom and said he wanted to come home. She took him back. You'd never guess any of this now, 28 years later. My parents are inseparable, and I've never seen them fight. My dad is the kindest man I've ever known. He gives amazing advice and has raised us to be loyal, compassionate partners in relationships, and just good people in general. It's not a particularly dark story, but it's something only my mom and I know. She didn't want me to tell my siblings, saying I was the only one mature enough to handle it, even though I'm the youngest. She also didn't want my siblings' image of their dad to be tarnished. But what about my image of my dad? Oh, well, I guess I've learned to see him as a person who made a mistake and grew from it. Story 12. This isn't about my family, but my godmother's. It happened in Los Angeles in the early 1980s. My godmother deeply wanted more children after having her son, but she couldn't get pregnant again. Around this time, her sister-in-law, who was in her early 20s, became pregnant out of wedlock, which was considered scandalous back then. Seeing an opportunity, my godmother coerced her sister-in-law into giving up the baby as soon as it was born. When it came time for the delivery, my godfather pretended to be the father, and my godmother instructed her sister-in-law to be admitted to the hospital under her name. As a result, my godparents' names were listed as the parents on the child's birth certificate. The situation created a sad reality for the child as she grew up. Everyone in the family knew the secret. Mean cousins would whisper about it and tease her, saying she wasn't really my godparents' child. However, she was never told the truth directly. As an adult, she finally confronted my godmother and was able to reconnect with her birth mother. It's a heartbreaking story all around. Story 13. My great-grandmother is 103 years old. Last summer, my family decided to dig into our ancestry, figuring that with her sharp mind and long life, she'd be a great resource for our search. Unfortunately, we were very wrong. It turns out my great-grandmother has changed her name at least four times. That we know of. On various legal documents, her name has slight variations, like Mary on one and Marie on another. As we continued digging, we found birth records for my grandmother and great-aunt. Both records revealed that they had multiple siblings they never knew about, all with different fathers. Even the mothers listed on the records had slight name variations. For example, my great-grandmother's last name was spelled differently on each document. When we brought these findings to her, she brushed them off, insisting that the records were inaccurate. We were digging too much, and it was all just flub paperwork. To this day, we don't know why she felt the need to conceal her identity so thoroughly, but she refuses to talk about it. As a side note, before she sold her house and moved into assisted living, she informed us about a large amount of money hidden in the walls of her home. So there's that too. Story 14. Super late to share this, but here it is. My father-in-law, let's call him Juan, has a long history of abusive behavior, particularly toward my mother-in-law, Laura, and their two children. Over the years, things only worsened. Juan became addicted to pain meds after a neck surgery, which made him increasingly unstable and abusive. At one point, in an attempt to stop Laura from leaving him, Juan researched how many pills he could take to almost kill himself and then staged an attempt, making a dramatic show of how he couldn't live without her. This was just the start. Over the next 10 to 15 years, there were multiple suicide attempts and countless other manipulative episodes. Eventually, Laura divorced him and left with their two children. My wife was 15 at the time, and her brother Todd was around 13. Juan's parents, however, refused to believe that their perfect son could do anything wrong. They blamed Laura entirely for Juan's behavior. After the divorce, Juan moved back in with his parents, where he still lives to this day at 42 years old. He has no job, pays no rent, and relies entirely on disability checks, perpetually playing the victim. Todd has bounced between living with his parents for years. Despite Laura being a wonderful mom who remarried a great man, Todd often preferred staying with Juan because Juan used his disability checks to bribe him to stay. Unfortunately, this exposed Todd to Juan's bad influence. Underage drinking being the most significant issue, which Juan encouraged, saying Todd was old enough to make his own choices. Juan continued being a terrible father to both Todd and my wife. Even though we live 8 hours away, he constantly called, texted, and left hateful voicemails. The first message would be an apology for his behavior, followed by rants like, "I should have made Laura abort you," and other vile statements. Things came to a head when Todd, living with Juan at the time, called my wife on his birthday, completely hysterical. After an hour of calming him down, he finally told her that Juan had gotten him drunk and raped him. His sobs and broken voice left no doubt that he was telling the truth. We told Laura immediately, and she was devastated but ready to act. She offered to fly Todd across the country to live with her, and Todd willingly left Juan's house. When Juan found out we knew, the harassment escalated. He called and texted relentlessly, using multiple new numbers every time we blocked him. In one voicemail, he admitted, "Todd was seducing me," followed by, "I couldn't control myself while drunk," and even, "I feel violated." It was sickening. A year later, my wife and I have a 3-month-old son, and Juan now wants to be involved in our lives and meet his grandson. That will never happen. Todd is living with his mom and stepdad, getting therapy to heal from the trauma. Juan's parents, however, still refuse to believe the truth. They insist that Juan could never do something like that and blame Todd, saying, "Obviously, Todd seduced Juan." Their denial has been so toxic that we've cut all ties with them as well. They began harassing us until we blocked their numbers too. For us, the safety and well-being of our family come first. Juan and his enablers have no place in our lives. Story 15. Both sides of my family have their share of dark secrets and hidden drama. It all started with my aunt, who won $3.8 million in the lottery in the early 1990s. Behind her white picket fence image, she was already struggling with drug addiction. Over time, she tried just about every drug until she discovered her favorite, and the reason she went to prison? Crystal meth. She started cooking meth in her house, even while her kids were present. Eventually, the house was raided, and she was arrested for manufacturing with intent to distribute. She spent all her lottery winnings, served her time, and now lives in a double-wide trailer. She's clean now, but it's a very Breaking Bad story. My dad had his own issues with gambling and drinking. My parents used to leave me and my sister alone in our casino hotel room at bedtime while they spent the entire night gambling. Only recently did I learn that my dad gambled away our college funds. It also explains why we moved from a big house to a much smaller one when I was in elementary school. We lost that house too, thanks to his risky stock market investments. My mom, though, has been pretty amazing overall. She sacrificed her career for us kids and did her best. That said, not every choice was great, like pulling me out of math class at 15 to tell me she wanted me to use the bat in the trunk of her car to attack my dad. Not exactly a shining moment. Grandpa number one tore his family apart by having an affair with the marriage counselor who was supposed to help him and my grandma work through their issues. To make matters worse, He had an estranged child with another woman and paid for her silence. That didn't last forever, though, and now I have an aunt my age. Grandpa number two was more of a mystery. He worked for Lockheed Skunk Works on the SR-71 Blackbird and was both brilliant and strange. He was also a jerk who never attended a single birthday or Christmas event in my entire life. While I don't know of any dark secrets about him, I'm certain he had his share. Story 16. I grew up never knowing my birth father or his side of the family. My mom always told me stories about how terrible they were. I knew I had a half-sister from him and another woman, but I didn't reach out until after his death. I'm happy to say I now have a great relationship with my half-sister and some cousins, who turned out much better than the generation before them. A few years ago, I did an Ancestry.com DNA test. Last year, a first cousin popped up whose name I didn't recognize. I reached out, and he told me he was adopted at birth and searching for his family. After doing some math, I realized he couldn't be from my mom's side. She was only 8 when he was born. Further investigation revealed he was the son of my father's sister. She got pregnant and gave birth at 16, but never told anyone. This cousin turned out to be one of the kindest, most loving people I've ever met. After exchanging messages, we met in person. Sadly, his birth mother passed away a few years before he could meet her, but I'm grateful to have him in my life now. Story 17. Last November, I decided to take a 23andMe test. A few days ago, I revisited the results and noticed a section I hadn't explored before. Possible DNA relatives. When I clicked on it, I was shocked to find I had 8 possible half-siblings. At first, I assumed it had to be a glitch. As far as I knew, my parents had no other children besides me and my younger sister, and they were definitely my biological parents. Or so I thought. Curious, I decided to message a few of these supposed half-siblings. One of them reached out to me on Facebook and explained that we shared a father and that we were all conceived via a sperm donor. I was completely confused and thought it must be some big mistake. I reached out to my mom for answers, but at first she avoided the topic and tried to deny it. However, as I continued talking with my half-siblings and gathering facts, the truth became undeniable. For one, my mom had always told me she had difficulty conceiving me. If the 23andMe results were a glitch, it wouldn't have connected me with so many half-siblings. Scrolling through photos of them, I realized I resembled them more than I resembled the man I called my father. Even the 23andMe heritage results didn't align with his background. When I confronted my mom again, she finally admitted the truth. She told me that when she and my dad struggled to conceive, they used mixed sperm from a donor and my dad to increase their chances. She never knew which sperm had taken. The man I called my father passed away when I was 19, so I'll never know his feelings on the matter. But it turns out my biological father is still alive, which is completely surreal. Even more shocking, I now know I have 18 half-siblings scattered around the world. 19 if you include my younger sister, who I always thought was my full sibling. I'm still processing all of this. It feels like nothing has changed, but at the same time, everything has. Story 18. As my mother told it, my great-great-grandfather came from a family of some substance in rural West Virginia. He was well-educated and for a time worked as a schoolmaster. He fell in love with one of his students, a girl much younger than him. She was about 15 years old, and they married. His family disapproved of the union, partly because she came from a much poorer background, and perhaps because of her character, as later events led relatives to describe her as having an evil streak. As a result of the marriage, my great-great-grandfather was disinherited and became poor, though he did own farmland. At some point, his brothers and father conspired against him, possibly through fraud or scheming, and had him involuntarily committed to an insane asylum. He quickly became ill there and died. He is buried on the asylum grounds, and I've seen his grave and the records of his commitment, so I know this much is true. The rest comes from family stories. After his confinement or death, his young wife abandoned their 4 children. The oldest was Robert, my great-grandfather, and the youngest, Jack, was just an infant. She left them on the family farm and vanished. Family memory portrays her as heartlessly evil, but I can't help but wonder if her actions were more about panic, despair, or an attempt to escape an unbearable situation. She was in her early 20s, far from her own family, on a farm she likely couldn't manage alone, with 4 children she couldn't afford to support. Her actions were wrong, no doubt, but they may not have been as cold as the family remembers. The children lived alone on the farm for some time before a traveling salesman discovered them and alerted the authorities. The oldest boy, Robert, was taken in by his mother's family, but not out of love. They wanted him as a laborer. His two sisters were adopted by other families, and the baby Jack was taken in by relatives on their father's side. Years passed and Robert grew up. He eventually left home to fight in World War II. By this time, he had lost contact with his siblings, but through letters, he managed to reconnect with his oldest sister. During the war, Robert sent much of his pay to her for safekeeping, trusting her over their mother's family, who he deeply distrusted. When the war ended, Robert returned home, reunited with his sister, and together they set out with his savings to find their two lost siblings. They were successful in locating their younger sister and reconnected with her. Sadly, they learned that Jack, the baby brother, had died years earlier in a tragic accident. He fell from a horse while playing polo, broke his neck or back, and passed away. Robert eventually settled in Ohio. He bought farmland that my great uncle still owns, built a house, now a ruin that we occasionally visit, and raised six children. His story is one of survival, resilience, and the effort to piece together a family fractured by tragedy. Story 19. My mom's cousin is actually her sister. When my grandmother was 16, she became pregnant. My great-grandmother would have forced her to marry the boy, but he was Irish Catholic and their family was Presbyterian. My great-grandmother absolutely forbade the marriage. When my grandmother gave birth, her married older brother came into the hospital room and handed her some discharge papers to sign. Exhausted from childbirth and not reading them carefully, she signed the papers, which were actually adoption papers. Her baby was given to her older brother and his wife. 2 years later, when my grandmother's younger sister was 16, she found herself in the exact same situation. The children born from these pregnancies were raised as cousins, but grew up thinking they were siblings, with no idea their parents weren't their biological ones. My grandmother's sister took this secret to her grave. While my grandmother only recently confessed the truth to the daughter she gave up, after decades of standing by silently as her biological children played with their half-sister, thinking she was their cousin. My mom and her siblings found out as teenagers because they learned that if they got my grandfather drunk, he would spill family secrets. Story 20. My great-grandmother had an affair with her next-door neighbor in the 1920s, and the result was my grandmother. My grandmother was adopted out, along with a piano and money for ballet, piano, and elocution lessons. Meanwhile, the man who was my great-grandfather married someone else and went on to start one of the largest and most successful companies in the country. His company is now a household name, listed on the stock exchange, and he was eventually knighted. His descendants are well-known public figures, with one even being a dame. Several books, buildings, and places are named after him. Fast forward to today, my husband does contract work for another company, and it turns out the owner is my fourth cousin. We share the same great-grandfather. While the family is incredibly wealthy and influential, we have no intention of saying anything. I think they'd be horrified to learn about us, as we probably don't fit the image they like to portray. We still have the piano. Story 21. My grandfather was a World War II veteran. He landed in Normandy plus 14 as a paratrooper, fought his way through Europe, and eventually made it to Berlin. He carried and loaded the Browning Point 30 caliber and met the Russians on the river. After the war, he became staunchly anti-war, teaching his children about the horrors he had witnessed. He eventually became a truck driver, delivering goods across the country. As part of the job, he had to join the Teamsters Union. He was deeply opposed to the corruption within the union and was vocal about it, which didn't sit well with the union leaders. In the 1980s, my grandfather was found clubbed to death on the side of the road. His truck was intact, the goods were untouched, and his wallet still had all its cash. The police confirmed it was a murder, not a robbery. My family immediately pointed fingers at the Teamsters, convinced they were behind his death due to his outspoken criticism of the union. While there's no hard evidence, the anecdotal accounts from my family, and the lack of any other explanation, leave me convinced. I never got to meet my grandfather. He died over a decade before I was born. His story has always felt like a dark shadow in our family's history. Story 22. I am the first generation of my paternal family to be born in the United States. My father and grandparents fled Italy in late 1944, about 6 or 7 months before Mussolini met his end. Until recently, it was assumed that they were the first members of our family to emigrate. Our family name is quite rare in Italy, and all of us originate from a small town called L'Aquila, which you may remember from the devastating earthquake in 2009 that made international headlines. Flashback to 1909. My great uncle, whom we'll call Herminio, left La Quila to move to Chile, claiming he wanted to take advantage of the gold rush. However, the gold rush had been in decline for several years by that time, so it's unclear if he was chasing a dream or intentionally misleading his family. Herminio kept in touch with occasional letters for the first year or so, but then he vanished. He was presumed dead. Fast forward to 1977. My grandfather, while doing genealogical research, stumbled upon a bank certificate issued to someone with our rare last name in the United States. He was baffled. As far as he knew, no family member had ever been to the U.S. He wrote letters and made calls to relatives in Italy, but no one could explain the mystery. So, my grandfather wrote a letter to the account holder, addressed to a small town in Tennessee. A couple of weeks later, he received a reply from a man we'll call Michael. Michael claimed to be the son of a man named Herminio, who had passed away when Michael was very young. He mentioned that he and his estranged sibling had lived in Iowa when they were children, but had later moved to Tennessee with their mother. Curious, my grandfather contacted the county seat in Grundy County, Iowa, which contained a town called Wellsburg. Sure enough, they found a death record for Herminio. From there, the story began to unravel, and the details were astonishing. Herminio had lied about going to Chile. Instead, he had moved to Philadelphia, where he was once arrested for fraud. Charges were dropped. By 1910, he was in Chicago, attempting to become a police officer, but was denied due to general immorality. In 1911, he made headlines for a scandalous divorce from a woman we'll call Martha Smith, which ended with him being run out of town. In 1916, Herminio somehow became mayor of a small town in Missouri. However, his term ended abruptly when it was revealed he had an affair with a married woman, the daughter-in-law of a state senator. Destitute and without prospects, he volunteered for service in World War I. Against the odds, he survived the war and returned to the U.S., eventually settling in Wellsburg, Iowa. He lived there for several years, working in uncertain jobs before committing suicide in November 1924. In his lifetime, Herminio fathered 7 children by 4 different women, served in World War I, was arrested multiple times, briefly held public office, and managed to live a life full of scandal and chaos, all while his wife and children in Italy believed he had died in Chile. Herminio was undoubtedly a scoundrel, but I can't help but admire his audacity and the sheer gall it must have taken to live such a wild and unconventional life. Story 23. My paternal grandfather killed his firstborn daughter when she was just 2 years old. The official cause of death was blunt force trauma, but he claimed she fell from her high chair. The case turned into a landmark trial in California during the early 1960s. Initially, he confessed to manslaughter charges, but his admission of guilt was later thrown out due to the circumstances under which he confessed. It was deemed to have been made under duress. To this day, nobody truly knows the full truth. Before her death, there had already been troubling signs. During a doctor's checkup, he was blamed for bruises and cigarette burns found on her body. My grandfather was an abusive alcoholic for most of his life, which casts an even darker shadow over the situation. The only solace I can hold on to is that on his deathbed, he requested a Catholic priest for a final confession. This was done in privacy, and I can only hope that he found a way to unburden himself of the monstrous acts he committed and find some measure of emotional peace before he passed. It's a complicated legacy to live with, knowing the damage he caused, but also hoping he may have sought forgiveness in the end. Story 24. When I was a senior in high school, a freshman girl walked up to me and said I was her uncle. I was taken aback and stared at her, noticing the resemblance to my father was uncanny. At the time, I knew of my sister, who was in 8th grade, and my 2 half-siblings, who were 5 and 8 years older than me. We all shared my dad's distinct eyes, and this girl had them too. I knew there had to be a connection, so I asked her to meet with me the next day to talk. That night, I went home and asked my mom if my dad had more kids I didn't know about. Sure enough, my mom admitted that my dad had 2 other children when he was 17 and 18 years old. Apparently, my dad didn't want us to know about them. My dad has always been a quiet man who doesn't talk about personal matters, and I suspect his experiences in Vietnam had a lot to do with that. A few months later, I brought it up with him during a car ride. He wasn't surprised that I had found out and said he thought I would have figured it out sooner. He explained that he had left for Vietnam after the half-siblings were born because their mom wanted nothing to do with him. After the war, he tried to reconcile with their mom, but it didn't work out. He knew he had grandkids, but wasn't sure how many. I told him I had met all three of his grandkids for lunch. He gave me a puzzled look and asked how old they were. I told him they were 3 to 5 years younger than me, and we had even gone to school together. One of them was part of my youngest sister's circle of friends. My dad was shocked. He thought they'd be much younger. Then, as if it couldn't get weirder, my dad said, "You know that Andrew you hang around with? Ask him who his grandfather is." Freaking out, I asked Andrew the next day about his grandfathers. He named one, but said his mom refused to tell him about the other. Long story short, it turned out Andrew was my dad's brother's grandson. My dad's brother had also been quite the ladies' man, and the connections just kept unfolding. Story 25. My aunt joined a convent at 17, back when nuns had to buzz their hair to wear their habits. After some time, she suffered a mental breakdown and had to leave. My grandmother was furious and made her walk around without a hat or head covering to publicly shame her for what she saw as a failure. When her hair started growing back, my aunt rebelled. She hooked up with a man, and before long, she became pregnant out of wedlock. My grandmother sent her away to live on her aunt's farm for the duration of the pregnancy. Once her son was born, she was forced to give him up for adoption before being allowed to return home. These two events deeply scarred my aunt and shaped the rest of her life. Nobody in the family, not even most of her siblings, knew about the pregnancy until a few years ago, when a cousin mentioned it in passing. Looking back, so many of her actions and struggles now make sense. Unfortunately, it's too late to address or heal the damage done, but understanding her past has brought some clarity to our family. Story 26. My aunt on my mom's side got pregnant at 21 in the late 1980s. The father of her child was a drunkard, and when she fell into an emotional crisis, my grandmother kicked her out of the house. At the time, my mom, who was older, had recently married, moved out, and given birth to my older sister. Wanting to help her sister, she offered her a room at our house. As a nurse, my mom also took care of my aunt's pregnancy needs, providing supplements and medical care at home. However, my mom also kept a stockpile of medications at home for emergencies, as nurses often do. Early in my aunt's pregnancy, she had several miscarriage scares, with bleeding and other complications. My mom attributed it to her unstable emotional state and lack of care during the first trimester. By the 8th month of her pregnancy, my aunt had found a new boyfriend and abruptly ran away from our house. My mom was shocked, but not entirely surprised. When she went to clean out the room my aunt had been staying in, she found half of her medication stock in the room, blisters and bottles, many of them half empty. Suddenly, everything made sense. The miscarriage scares and the bleeding hadn't been due to stress or bad luck. My aunt had been attempting to abort her baby throughout her pregnancy, using the medications my mom had stored at home. My mom was devastated and felt utterly betrayed. About a week later, my aunt gave birth prematurely. Her son had severely underdeveloped lungs and brain due to the damage caused by her actions. He was placed in an incubator but passed away a day later. My aunt didn't even bother to claim her son's body. My grandmother, sensing that my aunt would shirk any responsibility, traveled to the city to claim the baby herself. Despite being poor, she took out a loan to pay for a small coffin. She and my mom silently buried the child, who had no name, no mother, and no acknowledgement from the woman who had brought him into the world. My aunt never asked where the baby was buried, never showed regret, and seemingly moved on without a second thought. My mom kept this secret for decades. When I was 23, during a conversation about awful parenting, she finally broke down and told me. She said she couldn't carry the burden of the story anymore. To this day, I think about the child who never had a name, a mother, or even a chance at life. It's one of the most painful stories in my family's history. Story 27. One of my aunts kicked my maternal grandmother, her mother-in-law, out of their home in the middle of the night. This happened in the early 1990s. My grandmother had recently immigrated to America after my grandfather passed away. She was staying with my mom's oldest brother, who had taken her in. His wife, my aunt, had never lived in a joint family system and apparently couldn't handle it. One night, they had an argument. No one knows the details because my aunt has never revealed what it was about. The argument ended with my aunt telling my grandmother that she had to leave unless she could learn her place. My grandmother, being the strong and proud woman she was, essentially said, "Fine." She reminded my aunt that she hadn't raised 10 children just to be treated like trash and walked out of the house that night. At the time, my grandmother was over 70 years old, new to the country, had no phone, and no way to contact anyone in the family. She walked nearly 5 miles in the cold to a payphone she remembered seeing the week before, spent her last bit of change to call my mom, and then sat on the sidewalk in 45-degree weather, waiting for someone to pick her up. My mom and another brother rushed to get her and took her in. She lived with them from that point on. However, the ordeal had a lasting effect on her health and emotional well-being. Some of my relatives blame my aunt for my grandmother's eventual death, believing the incident contributed to her decline. Even my aunt's oldest son, who was old enough to remember the incident, openly criticizes her for what she did. Her younger children don't know about it, but it's a story that still haunts the family. Story 28. This story isn't so much dark as it is a fascinating family history. My great-grandfather, GGF, had an affair during the Great Depression. My great-grandmother, GGM, responded by sending my grandfather and one of his brothers, dressed in their Sunday best, to the mistress's house with a note that said, "If you take my husband, you'll have to take these boys too." It wasn't done out of spite. GGM simply didn't think she could feed all five of her sons on her own. After GGM passed away, GGF married the housekeeper. None of his children ever spoke to or acknowledged her. Only one person from my grandfather's family attended his wedding because his brothers believed he was marrying beneath himself. They were plant managers. While my grandmother's father was a working man, the one person who attended the wedding? The housekeeper. My grandmother, who had to deal with being looked down upon by her husband's family, was fiercely proper about appearances and manners. She always felt the need to prove herself to them, which my mother interpreted as judgment. It wasn't until years after her death that I learned the truth about why she was so particular. During World War II, my grandmother worked building airplanes. She fell in love with a fighter pilot while my grandfather was deployed overseas. When my grandfather returned, she confessed her affair and asked for a divorce so she could be with the pilot. My grandfather, who had been her high school sweetheart, asked her to give him a week to prove they could make their marriage work. She agreed and, at the end of the week, decided to stay with him. A few months later, the pilot was shot down over Africa. By that point, my grandmother was almost certainly pregnant with my father. She mourned the man she loved in silence while keeping up appearances for her husband's family, who already detested her. While my mother divorced my father for good reasons and bore him ill will for his infidelities and other flaws, her resentment extended to his family. This gave me a lingering sense that being part of this family, sharing this last name, was somehow a bad thing. Yet for other branches of the family, bearing this name is a mark of honor. It's a strange dichotomy, but understanding this history has given me a more nuanced perspective on who we are. Story 29. When I was a kid, I genuinely believed I wasn't a real human. My mom told me I was conceived via artificial insemination, and my young mind interpreted that as meaning I was somehow fake. When I was about 13, I overheard my mom on the phone with my aunt. She said, "No, she still doesn't know." I told her she was artificially inseminated. Confused, I confronted her about it. That's when the truth came out. She admitted I had a biological father after all. She had made up the artificial insemination story because she didn't want me looking for him. She said it would hurt my adoptive father's feelings. Fast forward to when I turned 18. My biological dad found me on Facebook. Suddenly, my life made sense. I had always felt like the odd one out in my deeply religious family, and now I knew why. My biological father was in a Mexican motorcycle gang. The kicker is that my four younger siblings have no idea I have a different dad. Family conversations about who inherited what features or personality traits from whom are always incredibly awkward for me. I just sit there, silently laughing at the irony. Story 30. My sister has been a hardcore drug addict for years, in and out of jail. She and her equally awful boyfriend had a child together, my niece. They were both neglectful and abusive, and drugs were always part of the picture. One night early in my relationship with my girlfriend, we visited my parents' house. My sister had taken my niece out to get the mail, but didn't come back for the entire day. She didn't answer her phone or respond to texts. My parents were sick with worry because my sister had been known to use drugs around my niece, and there were even instances where she offered her hero. When she finally returned home that evening, she was covered in track marks. She tried to spin a story about going to the park, but it didn't add up. My dad, who's a big guy, completely lost it. He punched her in the face, leaving her bruised, and kicked her out of the house. My niece was inconsolable, screaming and crying all night, saying she hated my father. What my parents didn't know is that my girlfriend and I heard everything. Even though my dad had mellowed out a lot since my childhood and had worked on himself, that night reminded me of the difficult times we had growing up. Part of me doesn't blame him for snapping. My sister had made his life a nightmare for years, but hearing my niece scream and cry like that cut me to my core. Writing this down is the first time I've really processed it, and it's both painful and relieving to get it off my chest. Story 31. There's a pattern of undiagnosed mental illness among the men on my dad's side of the family, and it's caused a lot of chaos. My grandfather seemed fine until he retired. Then he decided he wanted to become a medical doctor, despite having no prior training. When no U.S. school would accept him, he went to Russia to get his degree. For years, he was mostly absent, studying abroad. When he returned to the U.S., he tried to work as a doctor, but no one would license him due to his age. Undeterred, he opened an unlicensed clinic and started diagnosing people. He was arrested, went to jail, and got out, only to do it again and end up back in jail. Eventually, he decided he knew better than lawyers and began studying to become one. On the side, he started a trucking company. Amongst all this, we discovered he had another family years ago and a child none of us had ever met. My grandmother divorced him, and he now has a girlfriend or wife in Asia, though he lies and tells us he's going to Florida when he visits her. My dad and uncle inherited his chaotic tendencies, but their actions were far more damaging. My uncle had five kids with my aunt, a stay-at-home mom. He cheated on her repeatedly and refused to pay child support or alimony after their divorce. He constantly harassed her, showing up uninvited to the house and trying to stay with her and the kids. He now has multiple children with other women, none of whom he supports either. My dad's situation was even worse. While I was in college, he spiraled into paranoia and began abusing my mom. He accused her of cheating on him, but it turned out he was the one being unfaithful. He also developed delusions, believing that priests, radio hosts, and random strangers were speaking directly to him and telling him to do things. He thought people were trying to kill him, poisoning his food, clothes, and house. My parents eventually divorced at my dad's request, but he won't leave my mom alone. He threatens her if she won't remarry him and refuses to pay child support or alimony for the two kids still under 18. He'd rather go to jail than help. My dad's side of the family refuses to address these massive issues, preferring to keep up appearances of normalcy. It's exhausting and destructive. My siblings and I are working on distancing ourselves and building lives away from their chaos. Story 32. My great uncle had quite an interesting life, though much of it was hidden from my family for years. He, along with my grandfather and three other siblings, were born into a poor coal mining family in Appalachia in the 1920s. Before the Great Depression, the family relocated to Erie, Pennsylvania, in search of better opportunities. Life didn't improve much. They were constantly broke, often moving apartments in the middle of the night to avoid paying rent. When World War II broke out, my great uncles and grandfather all enlisted, possibly lying about their ages to do so. They fought at Normandy and were awarded various commendations for their service. After the war, my grandfather and his oldest brother returned to Erie, but their other brother, my great uncle, disappeared. Decades later, after hiring a private detective, the family tracked him down in San Mateo, California. By then, he had been running a smoke shop called Tommy's downtown for years. The family reconnected with him briefly in the late 1970s, but he passed away in the early 1980s. My family never spoke much about him, except to mention he had money. Through genealogical research, I learned that the smoke shop was more than it seemed. It was raided multiple times for illegal gambling operations. In the 1970s, there was even an attempted robbery at the shop, during which my great uncle was shot in the neck. Incredibly, he managed to walk to a nearby hospital for treatment and survived. Piecing all of this together from old newspaper articles and a visit to San Mateo has been fascinating. I wish I could find someone who knew him during that time, but most of those people are likely deceased. My family remains tight-lipped about his life, leaving me to uncover the details on my own. Story 33. This isn't the darkest family secret, but it's certainly one of the most chaotic. My mom's side of the family is unconventional, to say the least. Let's start with the household's ground floor, where my grandparents live. Here's the twist. They're divorced and have been for nearly 25 years. They don't like each other, but still share a house. Both are heavy smokers, and my grandfather is also a heavy drinker. They argue constantly, with him obsessively turning off lights and heating to save money. To make things even stranger, My grandmother's boyfriend also lives there. They've been together for over 20 years. He's the same age as my grandparents, divorced, and has a reputation as a covert psychopath. He's an unregistered reed illegal hunter with a house full of trophies and taxidermy. He doesn't hunt for food. He kills for fun. There are rumors that he abused his ex-wife, including dragging her by her hair down a flight of stairs. He's also accused of poisoning neighbors' pets, stealing, and sabotaging others' belongings. Allegedly, he's destroyed my grandfather's things and started a physical fight with him, not to mention hitting my grandmother. Despite all this, my grandmother defends him and brushes off his behavior. In the basement lives my grandmother's youngest brother.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
He's been spoiled his entire life. When their mother passed, he inherited all her money, moved in with my grandmother, and has lived there ever since. He's never worked or had a partner. After squandering his inheritance, he began mooching off the rest of the family, promising to repay loans he's never made good on. These days, he spends his time watching TV and reading books, surviving on food handouts. Finally, on the upper floor, my aunt lives with her boyfriend and my cousin. Her boyfriend is married, and their relationship began with an affair about 11 years ago. He eventually told his wife about it, moved out, and started a new life with my aunt. They're happy and stable, but they haven't divorced because his job-provided apartment belongs to him, and a divorce would force his wife to move out. He has two daughters from his marriage, and they often visit my aunt's place, spending time with her and my cousin. Despite the complicated arrangement, my aunt, her boyfriend, and my cousin are wonderful people, and my cousin and I often hang out and play games together. It's a tangled web, but somehow they've managed to make it work in their own unconventional way. Story 34. This is what I usually call the four-year story, though technically it's longer and could also be titled the little brother origin story. There are three of us siblings. The oldest two are only a year and a half apart, and the youngest came 10 years after the oldest. So there's quite an age gap. Long story short, we moved to a new state, and our dad hated it so much he wanted to leave. My mom got advice from a friend that the solution to their issues was to have another baby. Dad wasn't keen on the idea and even suggested she terminate the pregnancy, but she refused. Once my little brother was born, Dad spiraled, became a recluse, and eventually left under the pretense of going to get a dentistry degree. While Dad was gone, Mom secretly started seeing someone else. When Dad found out, he drove 18 hours straight to beg her to take him back. He gave her a day to decide. A day later, when I came home from school, I walked into chaos. An empty noose hanging, Dad wielding a knife, and broken furniture everywhere. While I was at school, Dad had attempted to hang himself. When that failed, he went into a rage, breaking furniture and threatening to hurt himself. At one point, while saying goodbye to us kids, he turned his back, and Mom slipped out to the neighbor wash babysitter's house and called 911. Dad sped off in his car before the cops arrived. That night, we were sent to shelters and put into therapy. Mom gave us cell phones to stay in touch with Dad, but every time we called, he would go on long, angry rants. Eventually, we just stopped calling. Fast forward 4 years. Somewhere in that time, Mom broke up with the other guy, and one day, seemingly out of nowhere, she decided to let Dad back into our lives. I still don't understand why or how she made that decision. I remember the night he returned because they had very loud S, which was traumatizing to overhear. Somehow life went back to normal after that. But whenever I think back to those years, something feels off. I can't shake the feeling that there's more to why Dad wanted to leave in the first place. It can't just be because he hated the new state. And I don't know what motivated Mom to let him back into our lives after everything.